Ken, I'm very thankful to be back in the United States of America. It was a long and yet a short 2 weeks. I missed seeing my wife for 2 weeks. It seems like that's always a long time, but the trip seemed somewhat shorter to me than it did last year. Many have asked me about the trip and what went on, so I was going to tell you a little bit about what took place. We left on February the 24th. We arrived about 11 o'clock Tuesday night in Manila on the 25th of February. Elder Gus Harder and Elder Don Ferris and Elder Donnie Hobbywack stayed in Manila for 2 days, and myself and Elder Darrell Chambers, we got up the next morning and caught another plane and flew to Bacola on the island of Negros and spent over there 2 days and went to numerous meetings and to numerous churches, and we just was really blessed and had quite a trip. Last year when I went, it took me about a week to get, used to the culture over there, not only in the difference in the people, but the weather was so much different than it was here in West Texas. It's very hot. They have two seasons of hot and hotter, and it's very, very humid and very muggy all the time. So, but this time, it seemed like once we landed and got off the plane, it wasn't in less than 24 hours we was acclimated, or I was, and many of the brethren have been there many times. It was certainly a blessing to go with Brother Darrell. He's got a heart as big as the state of Texas. He's a couple of years younger than me, but you won't find a Primitive Baptist preacher with a bigger heart than Elder Chambers. He loves the Lord's people, whether they be here in this country or whether they be in Africa. He's been there with Elder Vernon Johnson and some of the other brethren, and he's been numerous, numerous times to the Philippines. We begin to have services on the island of Negros, and there's an elder brother, Noli, is his first name, and I can't remember the names of all these. My first time to have met him, we were kind of surprised, Brother Darrell was, that he was still living. He was somewhat like Brother Sonny. He's on dialysis. And over there in the Philippines, if you don't have the money, you don't get it done. You pay up front for everything that you do. There's none of this. We get the services, and then we figure out a way to accomplish the payment. Over there, you've got it up front or you don't. But he has been receiving money. Elder Chambers sends him money every month to do that. But he was concerned that he might not be living, and he's very close to him. Brother Noli is just a wonderful man, a wonderful preacher, and just a great delight to be around him and his wife and his family. His son pastors the Santiago Primitive Baptist Church south of Bacola on that island. And we had services there and back up at two other churches, and it was just a great blessing among those brethren over there and to fellowship with them. And it's just a very exciting time. We spent 2 days there, and then on Thursday afternoon, we caught a jet boat for about an hour across the bay to Iloilo, and that's where we spent the night. And the next morning, we met Brother Gus and the other brethren at the airport, we picked them up, and about nine of us took a van, and we went up to the northern part of that island where Iloilo is, and that's where the typhoon was so devastating. And the churches up there, it pretty well completely destroyed those churches. There wasn't much left. The buildings that most of the people live in up there are not like the buildings here. They won't stand. They're made out of bamboo, or they're very similar to what we would have called barns, chicken houses, and stuff such as that that we're acquainted with on the farms that I grew up with when I was a kid. That's generally the type of structures that they have. They have a roof over them, no windows. They have openings. It never gets cold enough to need a window from that aspect. And they don't seem to have as many bugs. Mosquitoes is one problem, but I didn't encounter too many of those except at one church over on the island of Garamas, and we went over there a little later. But we went up and toured those churches, spent all day, and we came back that night, caught a plane for Manila, spent the night in Manila, got up at 4 o'clock the next morning, caught another plane to Pagadian on the island of Mindanao. We flew six or seven times, and most nights we'd get about 5 hours sleep, and we as a headed to the airport to catch another plane, and it was quite an experience. We went to Pagadian and went to Elder Willie Yator's church there. They've got one of the prettiest singing churches in any Bold Baptist church you'd ever seen. They sing in English, and I've got some of the videos I was showing them this morning. But he's got two twin daughters that are 21 years old that are just, I cannot tell you how wonderful singers they are and how wonderful singing that church has. It's Elder Chambers stayed there on Sunday. I was not there, and he said he never felt more liberty, and he said when they sang the closing song, he thought he was going to be carried away into glory. I mean, it was just, that's how well they sing, and just a great blessing to be there. I went to Malawi with Elder Rowley, can't pronounce his last name, but Brother Gus went to Diplion to be with Elder Kant. So we was none together on Sunday. We all went our separate ways. We all met back on Sunday, and we caught another airplane Sunday afternoon, and we flew to Cebu and spent the night there. That was the first night that we was so worn out. We went to bed about 7:30 and got to sleep and got up the next morning. Brother Gus caught a plane to Davao. Me and Brother Darrell went back to Iloilo. We stayed there for 2 days. That first day back in Iloilo, we went to Island Garamus where Elder Ephraim Delmo pastored a church. We also had the opportunity to go to a school and preach to me and Brother Chambers. Spent about 20 minutes preaching to over 400 children. So that was a great blessing, and it was anywhere from elementary all the way to high school. Brother Donnie and Brother Darrell preached at that school last year. Then we went and had services that night at Brother Ephraim's church. And then we caught a boat back to Iloilo after dark, about 10 o'clock. And then the next morning, we went back halfway up to where the typhoon devastation was and had a minister's meeting. There was about 68 ministers there. Most of them were not Primitive Baptist. We went over the doctrines of grace, and they were very receptive of those doctrines, except for one man. He was a man who had been one of the teachers in their seminary, and he didn't go along with what we taught, but Brother Darrell got up and answered his questions, and I think he got frustrated that the people that had been his students for so long were taking the words that we had spoken into their hearts and really asking questions. And anyway, he up and left early. But we had a great meeting. It was very receptive. They wanted us to come back and to proclaim the tulip doctrine again. And you know, some of those folks had never heard that in their lives. They never heard the doctrines of grace. And so it was a great blessing. But we got back about 6 o'clock, went out and had dinner. The next morning, me and Brother Darrell got on the plane and flew to Davao City. That was the day we were to be with all the children at the orphanage. And them children are just something else. They run out, they write you letters, they hug you, they just... they're so loving, and you just want to bring them home with you, I'm telling you. I got one of them I'd like to bring home, or I'd probably like to bring more than one of them home. But we took the kids shopping and went to a mall that day. We took them to a carnival that night, and we just had a great time. Took them to eat at a place called Jollibee's. It's the Filipino, it's like McDonald's, but it's their version of McDonald's called Jollibee. And over there in a McDonald's or a Jollibee, they only have two or three hamburgers. The rest of it's chicken and rice. I mean, they eat rice three times a day. And after two trips over there, I'm still not real in tune with their food. But, you know, it is edible, but it's not something that I'm still too crazy about. But anyway, that's they don't have the broadness of food, variety of food that we have here in America. But anyway, God has blessed them with what they stand in need of. We see the providential hand of God not only over there as we do in this nation, and it was a blessing to see them. We spent the whole day with them, and then next morning we caught another plane from Davao back to Manila, went to Elder Conrado's house and fellowshiped with him that afternoon. The one Brother Conrado was here and preached for us last April, and anyway, spent that afternoon, had services at the church at night, and we went home and took a shower and caught a plane for the United States. And I got on a plane at 5:45 Thursday afternoon, Texas time, and I got home at 11 o'clock Friday night, and I was either in the air or in the airport the entire time. So anyway, I'd kind of lost my voice, and I was really tired because it's hard to sleep on them airplanes when you're in the air 10 or 12, 14 hours and sleep very well anyway. But it was a great blessing. I enjoyed the trip, and Lord willing, we'll get to go back again. It's just exciting to see our brethren over there that just as it is for those who went to Africa. I know Brother Gale has been asked to go a time or two to Africa with Elder Vernon Johnson, and I know he's given some consideration of that. So it is a great blessing to be able to do that and to help those in need. To us, a little bit of money here is a lot of money to them, because it's just the difference in the what you get for a dollar versus what they have. They're on the peso, not the same as Mexico, but $100 here is 4,400 pesos over there, and so it's quite a bit of money. Anyway, it was a great blessing to be able to help them whatever way we could, and to look forward to doing that in the future. So I'm very thankful that the Lord blessed us with a safe return. We see His providential hand of mercy. As you well know, during that time frame, there was a Boeing 777 that went down in the sea, headed from Malaysia to Beijing, right over the area which we were traveling, and they still have not found the plane yet. One man from Texas on that plane and two or three others from the United States. But, you know, it's only by God's mercy that we get up every day. It's only by God's mercy that we're here. So anyway, I'm very thankful that we had the opportunity to go over there, and that God, through His providential hand of mercy and care, returned each and every one of us home. Elder Ferris is 80 years old, and it was quite a trip for him. Brother Don, he is a great blessing to be with him, but it was just about more than he could handle. Brother Darrell was holding him up, and it was just, it's hard to sleep 4 or 5 hours a night and go the way we go. It's hard enough when you're 56 or 55, much less I can imagine when you're 80 years old. So anyway, God brought us back safely, and we're very thankful for that, and very thankful for all the prayers that were lifted up on our behalf. And we would ask that you would continue to pray for those folks. They have a servant's heart over there, and it's such a blessing to be with them. And I thank you for the prayers that you offered on our behalf that we would return safely. So I want to speak just a little bit this morning and out of Luke chapter 12 about the providence of God. If I don't run out of voice, and it may not last too long. In Luke chapter 12, we see the parable of the rich man. But one of the keys to this parable in Luke chapter 12 is a contrast between a man who trusts in himself and whatever he has versus a man who trusts in God. A lot of people will begin to read in Luke chapter 12 and in verse 16, and it says, "And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully." Oftentimes when we read that verse, we begin to say, well, that's not me. I'm not a rich man. But you've heard the saying said many times about beauty, someone being beautiful, that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. I'll tell you right now, riches is in the eyes of the beholder. Sometimes we think that we're not rich, and yet we are. Another thought about this parable is that we've been given, by the grace of God and the finished work of Jesus Christ, a riches and an inheritance that no amount of money or earthly goods can compare to. Every one of us have that blessing who are born of the Spirit of God. We have a riches in Jesus Christ that you cannot compare to anything in this world. It says this, the ground of this certain rich man. This man was already rich. And so often we'll look at that parable and say, well, that's not speaking to us. But as beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, riches in a materialistic way, true money is in the eyes of the beholder. I don't care how little money you have, if someone in a third world country, whether it be in Africa or the Philippines or any many, many other countries, they look at every one of us and we would be rich in their eyes. To us, we look around and say, well, we're not rich. We don't have millions or we don't have billions. But how rich you are is really only you, according to your perspective or the perspective of someone else. But we do have the blessing of the riches of Jesus Christ and the hope of living with Him in glory. We are given the earnest of our inheritance, an inheritance that every child of God will receive that is more valuable and consist of more riches than any riches you can ever gain upon this earth. It says here in this parable that the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. Now, every one of us, I believe, are rich because of the finished work of Jesus Christ. But from a natural standpoint, this man here, he was rich also. But God continued to bless him. Now, one of the great ideas that we get forth in this parable and we want to learn is, are we leaning upon our own riches and our own understanding, or are we trusting in God? Oftentimes, the view of things has everything to do. Well, let's back up and get verses 6. Are not five sparrows sold for two farthings, and not one of them is forgotten before God? But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, ye are more valuable than many sparrows. Now, this rich man down here, he's going to lose sight of God in the midst of his riches. I've made a statement many times, and I'll make it over and over. God is not bothered at you having a lot of money. And I'll tell you right now, you can study the Old Testament if you don't believe that, and you look at Abraham, you look at Jacob, you look at Job, and on goes this list. You look at Solomon. Abraham had more, as much money as about anyone you'll find in the Old Testament, including Job, and they were both very faithful men. You know, having a lot of money is not the problem. It's when the money has you. It's when the money controls you that the problem exists. And this is one of the problems that's existing right here in this parable. This man is beginning to lean and trust on himself and his own riches. As I said, riches is in the eye of the beholder. But to many folks in Mexico, Philippines, Africa, I could go on and on and on, regardless of how little we think we might have in this country, we are rich. We are rich. They would love to have what we have, even though we may not consider ourselves to be naturally rich or financially rich. This man, it goes on and says in verse 21, and then we'll get the gist of this parable, so is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. When we think about this parable, the one thing that comes to mind is Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not to thine own understanding. When we begin to trust in the riches of this world, whether it just be materialistic things or whatever it might be, and not in the God of heaven, we're leaning to our own understanding. When we make decisions in our life and we think about the providential care of God, we find in Luke chapter 12 that the Lord is going to provide for his people. That's one of the great lessons. Now, he didn't say that he's going to give you everything that you ever wanted. But he says that you are far more valuable than any amount of sparrows. And even though he looks over the ravens and he looks over the sparrows, he feeds them, he says you're far more important. Do you trust that God will take care of you? Are you leaning to the understanding of God and trusting him with all your heart? Are you leaning to your own understanding? You know, there's one thing that we need to understand too. The Bible tells us without faith, we cannot please God. If we're walking by sight and not by faith, if we're leaning to our own understanding, then the Bible tells us that it's impossible to please God. He didn't say it, you just might not please God. He said it without faith, it is impossible please God. For faith is the substance of things not seen. Evidently, you know, faith is looking unto God, who no man has ever seen, and depending upon him to care for us and to take care of us. You know, providence means to provide or to take care. You know, I think so many times in my life about the providential hand of mercy of our God in my life, and I know in each one of your lives. Psalms 31 and verse 15 says, my times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. But our times are in the hand of the only true and living God. Your hope of protection is in the hand of the only true and living God. You know, we sometimes think we can protect ourselves or protect our family members, but I'm going to assure you, if God is not protecting them, you're not going to. God is our protector. God is our refuge. God is our fortress. God's providential care for his people means that God's involved in our lives each and every day that we live. He says that He will provide what you and I stand in need of. He tells us to trust in Him. You know, over in James chapter 4, and it talks about two men that decided that one day that they would go into a city and they would buy and sell their product and they would get gain. And the Lord said, in the book of James says, what is a man's life? It is but a vapor that appeareth for a little time and vanisheth away. That we ought to say, Lord willing, if it be the Lord's will, I will do this or I will do that. This is what we see here in Luke chapter 12. This man was not trusting in the Lord. He was trusting in his riches and his own, in the arm of the flesh, as Brother George used to say, in his dependence upon himself and others to go through life. But God said He would take care of us. Do you trust Him? In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy steps. I know many times in my life I have failed to trust in God with all mine heart. I've tried to lean to my own understanding. I want to do this and I want to do that. And I sometimes fail to pray many times, Lord, if it be thy will, I will do this or I will do that. Lord, if it's something that you would have me to do, I will do that. But I did learn one thing in my life. God will never lead you in a way to direct you away from His service or to labor in His kingdom. Now, that doesn't mean we don't get there sometimes in our lives, but you can be sure that if you go in that direction, it's not God's will. The Bible tells us that we're not to forsake assembling. If we do, we willfully sin. It is God's will that we join together with our brothers and sisters in worship. It is God's will that we love our wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave Himself for it. It is God's will that you bring your children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It is God's will that we take care of the elderly. You can read that in the Bible. It is God's will that we do this and we do that. And if you want to know what God's will is in your life, read Scripture. The majority of God's will for you and for me and for any of His children is displayed or manifest in His written word here for you and I to read and to understand as we go through life's journey. But here in Luke chapter 12, this rich man, he was already rich. And I sometimes think from a spiritual sense, that speaks to every one of us here, because we have an inheritance waiting upon us that will be far superior to anything you and I have ever known, that we won't even be able to speak a word in glory compared to what we have here on this earth today. We have that. But yet this man got lost in his own riches. And don't believe that just because we're not a billionaire or millionaire, that this doesn't apply to us, because it does. I don't care what level of income you are on, there's somebody out in this world that's far below you. And in their eyes, we are financially rich. We have a lot more than they have. You know, we always seem to, the further up we go in life, the more we raise that level, the more we lift that up, and we declare to ourselves in our own minds that we're not one of these. And that's the way this parable begins. A certain rich man, in my own thinking, I wouldn't say I was a certain rich man, that I didn't have all the goods of the world had to offer. He goes on and says, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? As I said, having a lot of money is no problem with God. It's when the money has you. It's when we're not taking what God has blessed us with and using that to His glory. And there's many, many ways to do that. But that's exactly where this fellow fell in this parable. He began to trust in his own riches. He began to look to himself. He began to think about, what can I do? The Lord declares in this parable that this man is a fool. You know, that hits home. He says, but God said unto him in verse 20, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall all these things be which thou hast provided? You know, when we do something in life, regardless of our financial state or wherever we might be, we need to never forget to trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not to thine own understanding, because we as natural human beings in our carnal state, we want to understand the road we're going down, where it leads, and what will be the end result of everything. But that's not walking by faith. That's walking by sight. And God says that He would provide all the things that you stand in need of. He goes on to say in verse 23, or verse 22, he says, "Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, neither for the body, what you shall put on." You know, God said he's going to provide. Do we believe that? Do we trust him? You know, sometimes we can't see how that's possible, can we? We don't know how we're going to get to the end of our days. Do we trust in the Lord that he will take us there? That he will be with us? That he'll never leave us nor forsake us? That we may boldly say the Lord is our helper? Do we truly trust in him? Or do we trust in others? Do we trust in anyone, ourselves, besides the Lord our God? He says, "The life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls?" How much do we need in this life? As I said, there's nothing wrong with having a lot, especially if we take what God gives us and we use it in his kingdom for his glory. There's absolutely nothing wrong. And I know people that have done that. And their cup flow runneth over. It continually runneth over. God loves a cheerful giver. This man here got caught up in what he had, and he decided that he was going to tear down those barns he had, and he was going to fill them higher and taller because he didn't know what to do with all this excess. But if God happens to bless us in that way, we ought to know that God is not going to leave us dry. He's not going to leave us destitute. He's promised that we're much more valuable than ravens or sparrows, that he's going to feed us and he's going to clothe us. He's going to be with us until the end. David said, "Although I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." He said, "Thou art with me." God is with his people. He never leaves them. He never forsakes them. And he's promised to be with you till you take your last breath, to take care of you. That's God's providential care. He provides what we need. It's walking by faith and understanding that we don't understand how we're going to get there. We don't understand how we're going to maybe eat our next meal or where we're going to get our next clothes, but trusting in God that his word is true and that he will deliver what he promised. I believe that. I don't understand all things in the word of God, but if God said it, I believe it. And if we are walking by faith, we need to believe what God said. This man began to trust in the arm of the flesh. He began to trust in himself. He began to get to a point and thought, well, and he said, "This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods." The man was already rich, and God continued to bless him. We're all rich. We may not know it, but we are. We're all very rich. Because one day we're going to live in glory throughout all eternity. And we're not going to have this old sin to bog us down and to burden us. Sometimes we have trouble in life because we self-inflict ourselves with the problems of this life, whether it be by debt or whatever may be the issue. Many of our troubles are self-inflicted. But we need to trust in God. He's not going to leave you destitute. He's not going to leave you barren. And pretty soon, you're going to evaporate and be gone. Our life is a tale that is told. It's like a vapor that appeareth for a little time and vanishes away. Compared to eternity, the time that you and I live upon this earth is nothing. And we're all getting very, very close to that time of departure when we shall go and be with the Lord forever and ever. I know that that day gets more precious to me, and I know it does to many more here. I read of a man that, and I was telling Sister Pat yesterday that her daughter Cecilia's boss, he was a few years older than me. I've known him all my life, and he had an aneurysm last week, and he passed away. And he was president of Security State Bank, and just all of a sudden, they carried him out. Me and Sister Suzanne talked to a woman at Costco yesterday, and his name is George Richardson, and he had an aneurysm, and he's no longer with us. I mean, nobody promises us another day. We don't know how long we'll be here. Some of us might not be here next week. But we need to trust in the only true and living God that as long as we live upon this earth, that he will be with us and he will provide what you and I stand in need of. He may not fulfill every pleasure and every desire that you've ever had. But he said he would never leave you. He said that he would clothe you and that he would feed you. He goes on and says, "And which of you And which of you, with taking thought, can add to his stature one cubit? We can't do anything to change ourselves in this life. He says, consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothes the grass, which is today in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe ye, you, O ye of little faith? He says, and seek not what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, neither be ye of a doubtful mind. Have any of us here today ever been of a doubtful mind? Have we ever doubted, will God carry us to the end of our day? You know, Solomon told us that the brevity of life and the assurance of death is certain. If you're living here today, we can all count on dying unless the Lord returns while we live upon this earth. Death is something that's coming to the doorstep of every one of us. And to many of us, it'll be sooner than later. But God has promised to never leave you nor forsake you. He's promised to go with you to the very end, to provide what you stand in need of. You know, oftentimes in this country, we become stressed out. We worry, how are we going to get there? But God said he promised. He says when we don't believe that we have very, very little faith. God will carry us on our way. He's going to provide what we stand in need of. You know, we may not ever have all the things we wanted on this earth, and that's all right. You're going to have so much in glory, you'll forget what little you had on this earth, because we're going to have an inheritance that'll blow the riches of this world away. Just to live with God throughout all eternity, to live with Christ, who died for you and I, who paid the penalty that you and I could not pay, to live with him throughout all eternity, to be in perfect harmony and love with our brothers and sisters. I was talking to Elder Ferris on the way home, and I said, can you imagine what it'll be like to live in a world that has no sin, to never have a bad thought about a human being or another person throughout all eternity, not just some of it, to never be angry at anyone? I mean, it's just almost unbelievable. But by faith, God promised it, I believe it. That day is coming. This time is short. It's but a moment. It's but a blink. We get caught up in it, and then we're gone. We're done. We're here today, and we're gone tomorrow. And every one of us have had loved ones in our life to know that exact truth. That you can wake up one day, and the next day, there's a great chance you might not see them. I've lived that, I've experienced it, and I know many of you have. So to think that we're going to live on and on, we have no promise of that. But we do have a promise that we can hold upon, that God will be with us, and that he will deliver what you and I stand in need of. I don't care how rough the going gets. You know, the folks in the Philippines, I don't think that country could ever become like the United States. You know, I asked one of them brothers, I said, how much money do you think it'd take over? And he said, well, first of all, you'd have to drop a bomb and start over. I mean, it's just pictures won't do justice to what's going on over there and the way the folks live. But they're used to it, and that's what they know. This is what we know. But you know, God provides for them just like he does for us. They're not starving to death. Somehow or other, the Lord's people over there are going on. His providential care and safekeeping, it's for those folks just like it is for us. And the folks in Africa, wherever God's people are around this earth, he's taking care of them. He's not forsaking them. Because one day, and their days will be short like ours, they'll pass from this life and they'll be in glory and they'll have the very same inheritance that you and I have. What a day that will be. You know, aren't you thankful that going to heaven ain't based upon how much you can collect and put together on this earth or how little? But based upon what Jesus Christ done when he went to the cross of Calvary and died in our room and in our stead, paid every sin that you and I have ever committed. And I'll tell you that if he did, I can't tell you how many sins I've committed. I can't believe he paid for them. But the Bible tells us that he paid for all the sins of all the elect. There's no number high enough in the universe to match that for us to speak. It's so great. But that's a God we serve. And as we close today, excuse me. I'm about to run out of voice. I want you to understand that we're to trust in the Lord with all our heart. And we're not to lean to our own understanding. I know that's a tall order, but Solomon said that in Proverbs 3 and 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not to thine own understanding. God is going to provide. And if God blesses you to be an individual with an excessive amount in this life, don't go to hoarding it. Because God said He's going to take care of you. He's going to get you to the end of your way in this life. He's going to provide. He's promised. You know, there's never been a promise that God made that He failed to fulfill. Not one. Why would He fail to fulfill that promise? When He said, I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee, that you may boldly say the Lord is your helper. Not one promise throughout all history has God failed to fulfill. He's fulfilled every promise. And we can count on that. We can't count on ourselves, and we certainly can't count on the things that we put together on this earth, but we can count on the only true and living God. He's going to care for us. God knows the feelings of our infirmities. He knows our needs daily. He's going to provide. The Word of God promises it, and I'm very thankful for that. I thank you for this, your attention. I thank you for the prayers that you offered up for me the last couple of weeks.